go through the gears. You guys get ready. Get ready, because this is the one. This is it.
Psyched up.
This is it. Wait, wrong.
What?
What?
What? Are you all psyched up?
What?
Yes. What?
What?
Yes.
Yes. Psych, they have pineapple in every episode.
They do?
Yeah, there's a pineapple in every episode of Psych.
I've never watched Psych.
What?
Yeah.
What is this show?
What?
Never heard of it.
Oh my fuck! Both of you. Oh.
No, I've seen a couple episodes, but I haven't.
Psych is amazing. You should check it out.
I literally have not heard of it.
It's,
my media consumption is really deep.
It's one of the USA shows that's. It's,
well, it's gone now.
It's gone now, but it used to be, you know, USA would put out their steady stream of just kind of schlock.
Yeah.
Psych is a diamond in that rough.
It is diamond as hell, man. So the premise is that the main character.
Oh, you mean the Medium?
Yeah, it's
stolen directly from Medium.
Do you know the Medium? The show Medium?
I've heard of it.
Okay, well, Medium is a blatant ripoff of Psych.
Okay.
It came out like 3 years after, and it's the exact same plot, just done less funny.
Okay.
And they actually turned tables on it, because in Psych, the characters then start talking about how their favorite show is Medium, and it's such a great show, and they watch it all the time. But Psych is fucking amazing. The duo between the two main characters, the writing is like that bromance, like the Scrubs, like Scrubs style,
mm-hmm.
that it has that same amazing chemistry between them. But he has an eidetic memory, and he pretends to be psychic and is like the consultant for the local police to try to solve crimes. But
like the Mentalist,
Oh, maybe the Mentalist that we're thinking of, not Medium.
Not Medium, yeah, Mentalist. It's Mentalist, not Medium. Mentalist is a shitty ripoff of Psych.
Okay.
So Psych is Mentalist, but good and funny, and with the JD and Turk bromance going on. And you should watch it. It's fucking amazing. And there's a pineapple in every episode.
Okay.
And What's-His-Face is in it as the main character's dad, Corey Benson.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm thinking of Burn Notice that Bruce Campbell's in. There was another show that was on.
It was all right, yeah.
It was on USA that was good. Yeah.
I think at this point, though, we could have an entire episode that's just Nathan making fun of me for being unaware of media.
So it's the standard, like, first 2 weeks of a guy dating? That's the first 2 weeks of any relationship is the guy just saying to the girl, "You haven't seen that?" And her just smiling and nodding. "No, I haven't seen Transformers the movie. No, I haven't seen all 5 Die Hards. No."
There's only 4 diehards.
There's only 3 diehards.
And
I'm tempted to say there's only 2.
Oh.
There's 1, 2, and Vengeance are the only. After that, just fucking stop. And 2 isn't a good movie.
4 is not bad.
It's not good.
No, four,
Chat says your mic isn't feeding.
Hello? Hello?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I seem to be.
Is your feeding
okay,
now?
Am I? Yes, I seem to be
working.
Hey,
look, it's bouncing up and down. It helps when you're plugged in.
Yeah.
No, I muted. I don't know why I muted last time. I think we
who
just
was yellow?
Oh, when we were doing the normal non-live cast, we
had
just the audio version. We didn't have a mic plugged in.
Gotcha. Okay.
So sorry. Well, I guess Dave didn't participate that much. I'll make up for. I'll imitate
I haven't
Dave
seen
there.
That.
I haven't seen that.
Psych's really good.
Okay.
You know that's right. That's a oft-repeated line in Psych, they say. I still have Boots.
I honestly can't remember. I know I've seen Die Harder, but Die Hard and Die Hard with a Vengeance are the two that really stand out as being good. So maybe maybe the fact that I can't even remember Die Harder is evidence that there are only two in the series.
Die Harder is not...
Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
It has an issue that it follows Die Hard, and then they basically repeat almost the same formula for the second one, except for it's an airport.
And then Die Hard with a Vengeance was really good.
Die Hard with a Vengeance is really good. Mainly because it's like a buddy cop film.
Yeah. You add in Sam Jackson, you got Jeremy Irons, you got some good shit going on.
I really liked I think it was the fourth one, because the fifth one is the one where him and his kid, right?
Yeah,
in Russia.
I think.
That one's bad. The one with
Kevin Smith.
Smith was in it, and the villain was Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah, I mean,
which the unrated version of that one is the proper one, because it was a PG-13 Die Hard that had it just had no swearing. It just didn't feel like a Die Hard film. Then the unrated.
You need blood and swearing to be Die Hard.
The unrated one is much better.
Yeah, I'm sure it's decent. Like maybe it's worth including. It might be in my. If I rewatch them all, my guess is that one and Vengeance will be the flawless, amazing films. Mm-hmm. Harder and four will be passably decent.
Yes.
And five will be, why did you make me watch this?
Yeah. Five would be Alien 4. That's how I consider five as being as Alien 4. And I consider Die Hard 4 as being Alien 3. It's worth it on its own.
Assembly
it's,
cut or theatrical release?
I don't think I've ever seen the assembly cut yet. But I
you should. It redeems it a lot.
The normal one was fine with me.
Yeah, but. I don't hate it. Like, a lot of people hate. I never hated it, and then I saw the assembly cut, and it's. I like the assembly cut of three at least as much as Alien Singular.
Sure.
Yeah, the first one.
It's kind of it's similar to me. Like, Aliens itself, I don't really like watching Aliens unless it's the
director's cut.
Yeah. I mean,
there's
a lot more stuff. It just makes more sense.
No, I'll have to check out that cut for Alien 3 because I thought it was kind of underrated. I didn't think Alien 3 deserved most of the hate it got.
Yeah.
Oh, then you would probably love the assembly cut then.
Yeah, it really ups it from being not as bad as it people claim to actually being good.
Yeah.
Parts of the storyline in it, basically with the company coming in at the end of it, that's not necessary, but the rest of it is very rooted in the horror of it, you know, with a monster slowly hunting down folks in the prison.
It's one was horror, two was action, and three was going back to horror. You had a bunch of unarmed people being slaughtered like prey by one unstoppable killing machine.
Yeah.
And I don't know, for some reason, the studio, the amount of studio interference in the third one is comical.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that was one of the big differences that Alien and Aliens both really feel like Golden Age of Hollywood movies. And when I say Golden Age, I don't mean like the black and white Golden Age, but like the 70s, the Golden Age of Hollywood. And Alien and Aliens, even though they're a bit later than that, really feel like that director-driven style of film. And then Alien 3 had a lot more influence from the studio.
Correct, because by that point they had, you know, so Alien, the studio didn't give a shit about.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
this is a small-budget horror film. Decent budget. Not B-movie small, but it was here we'll make a horror movie, it's not a big risk.
I have heard people claim that Alien was an art film and had to kind of think about that and say, I disagree, but I understand what you're saying.
The director elevated it to having some artistic merit, but it was when somebody wrote a check, they were like, let's make a shitty horror film.
Yeah.
So they didn't care. So they're like, go make that movie. Then Aliens, they're like, oh, James Cameron, you know, creator of The Terminator and other such things. We trust you to make an action film. Go, go, go. And they left them hands off. Then when they make Alien 3, David Fincher was not. He hadn't made Seven yet. You know, he wasn't a big name, and they didn't trust him. And at this point, now that there's already two and you're working on your third, this is a franchise. You need to protect the franchise. A sequel can fail. A franchise has to be protected. Yep. And so they panicked, and they had their thumbs in every pie possible. But, you know, that's life.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Alien 3 just seemed a lot more like a more modern sci-fi, and I think for the most part, Alien and Aliens were more classic sci-fi movies and worked better as a result. But anyway, as I was saying, Alien 3 was not as bad as a lot of people seem to think, in my opinion.
And there is no reason to watch the non-director's cut of Aliens anymore. Like, I think at the time, it's one of those director's cuts where there was no reason for any of those scenes to be cut. They all make the film better. It's just people at the time. Now they make three-hour Pirates of the Caribbean movies, right?
Yeah.
Back then, it was an hour and a half and you're done. Like, you can't go over that. And so they cut all this shit for size. Okay, even director's cuts, only like 2 hours.
So we want to talk about a movie that went downhill after the first one.
I put the second one on Netflix while I was cleaning the house today, and oh my lord.
So James Cameron, I guess, is just director, but I mean, that's not including writing credits. So I was just looking at his IMDb. So he's only done two movies before Terminator, and that was Xenogenesis, which was a short, and then he did Piranha Part 2.
Yeah.
And then the Terminator, then Aliens.
Yeah. How soon after Terminator's Aliens? I don't remember the exact years.
84 to 86.
Okay, yeah.
And I think Alien itself was like 79.
And with like a year of production, you know, that means that within a year after Terminator came out, when it was at its height, is when they tapped him to start doing Aliens, if you pace that out.
All he's got is this amazing thing. So then after
Aliens... That's not true. He made Avatar.
No. Then after Aliens, Aliens, he did The Abyss, Terminator, True Lies, Terminator 2 3D, Titanic, and then...
That's my Titanic opinion.
And then basically Avatar'd. Since then.
The Abyss is another movie that you should never watch the non-director's cut. And that's not just it improves it. That's like Kingdom of Heaven level. Do not watch the non-director's cut. Be warned.
Correct.
Arctic Circle says, the second Pirates movie has one good scene, and I don't believe you, and you are going to fail at convincing me because I'm never going to watch that movie again.
Some people like the fighting one? It's the first of the ones with Squid Face.
Oh.
It had a lot of interesting ideas, and all of them were executed horribly.
Yeah.
As Ask a Ninja said, it was directed by Gore Verbinski, and it needed a lot more gore and way less Verbinski.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think that was in the floor plan.
No.
Was that?
No, it was in his... Ask a Ninja did a review of Pirates of the Caribbean 2, and then he did a review of Pirates of the Caribbean 3, which was just he reposted the review from 2, and he said, anytime I say Kraken, substitute in Keith Richards. And then he just played the review for Pirates 2. The Fight on the Water Wheel,
No.
The fight on the water wheel was when I was watching the movie, and I was like, okay, this is useless. This is terrible.
That's a cartoon.
Yeah, that was the fight on the water wheel was when that movie said, okay, this might get better. To no, this is never going to get better.
If you look at the first one, the closest they get to a schlocky thing like that is the fight in the blacksmith. Right, where they're like on they're on like a wheelbarrow that's going left and right, and then they get up on the rafters, and it's that same using the environment, but it's done intelligently, and it's two guys fighting in a warehouse. Like problem with the Pirates movies after the first one is twofold. One, there's three times as much Johnny Depp as there needs to be. He should not be the main character. That is a lovable supporting character that sells good toys, but your cameras don't focus on. And the second problem is they took the things that were just right at the cusp of being over the top in the first one that were fun over the top, like a 10.1, and they cranked them to 30 and fucking ruined them. The water wheel scene is stupid.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with that.
Nathan and I agree on something in a movie, so it has to be right.
Right? That Venn diagram right there.
Hey, I do want to say this.
Can you try your mead?
I've been drinking a little bit.
It's sweeter than the other ones because it's dry last
sweeter.
Time.
It is much sweeter than the other stuff.
Yeah.
So I do want to mention this small little thing. So we're doing a podcast.
Yeah.
This is episode 234 of the Crippled System Podcast. My name is Andy.
234? The screen said 232 once upon a time.
It did, before I changed it.
So last time it was wrong and...
No, last time it was right, because then we skipped. We did 233, which was just a straight audio podcast.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. In 234, my name is Andy, and I play Kador, and I play some Gilball.
My name is Nathan. In theory, I play Minions, and I'm currently playing an Ethne Scorch deck.
And I'm Dave, and I play Kador for another week. In addition to that, I suppose I play a High Mountain Tauren Druid.
Okay. No. I play all the WoW myself.
Big news in the Gwentverse since our last podcast.
That shit's being shut down. Shut down.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, totally dead.
Yeah, no, well, but
that's what people are fucking saying, and it's so dumb. People are so dumb.
I talked to Jim. Jim was, I was mentioning to Jim.
Sky is falling it or no?
No.
He seems more, because he's usually more reasonable
than that. Wait, but before we're talking about something causing the sky is falling,
what happened?
Yes.
So, right before the end of last year, Gwent came out with a midwinter update, which added a lot of things to it, like the create mechanic, which is basically discover from Hearthstone, was added to the game. They changed some stuff, whatever. And it was rough, to say the least. There were some bugs and glitches, some things. There have been problems. They haven't really smoothed out the create mechanic's power. It's way overpowered sometimes, and it's way underpowered. No, it's mostly just way overpowered, whatever. So a lot of people have issues with it. myself and Jim and a few other people feel that they're all very over the top, like, about the size of the issues.
Sure.
But there are issues, okay? I mean, just like every version of Steamroller had issues and had to be polished.
You have that one caster that will break the system.
So you know, you were done with this. You didn't like it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just going to do that. So 2 weeks ago now, CD Projekt Red did what they called their roadmap, and they said, here's what we're doing. Next week, which is now last week, and they did do it, we are updating a bunch of graphical stuff, we're fixing some bugs, and we are implementing the last of the premium cards, because a bunch of the Midwinter Update cards that they added didn't have their premium art yet. And so they're like, we're doing that. Then in May, we're doing a balance update. We're gonna tweak a few cards. Like, remember 2 weeks ago, I wanted to talk about Wardancer. I said Wardancer is an interesting card. They called out Wardancer as a card that they're going to change. And then there's going to be nothing for 6 months from roadmap announcement. They're not going to touch the game for 6 months because they're doing basically a massive revamp behind the scenes to release Gwent 2.0, basically. Okay. They're like, we might change the actual way the game plays. There's currently 3 rows on each side. We might get a 2. Who knows? We might change this. We don't even know what we're going to do. But for 6 months, you're getting that one update, and then that's it. And so now people are panicking and saying that Gwent's dead. It's like, it's not fucking dead. Because they're not doing updates, they're still doing events. Yep. Like, they're still doing faction battle events. They're still doing all that kinds of stuff. They're just not going to do new cards. They're not going to do updates.
But if they're not going to put out new stuff, then the game is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Game's just dead. No.
Also, they said at the end of that 6 months, when they do the massive revamp, every single card in everybody's collection will be millable for 100% face value.
Yep.
You can take all of your cards and turn them into the exact same number of cards of whatever you want.
Yep. Yeah, I know that's...
So you can't possibly get screwed by revamp. Like, calm down, guys. Like, I'm going to play Gwent for the next 5 months, knowing that there's not an update till October. Oh, well. It's still the game it is now.
The other thing, though, too, is as you're going to be playing it for the next 5 months, you know, as they're not putting out new stuff, they're still gathering data from there to be used in their revamp. I mean, it's been a lot of work that they put in this, and man, CD Projekt Red, they do a lot of good stuff.
Yeah,
I can't see this being a bad thing at all, especially with the full refund of basically everything that you already put into the game.
Depending on what the edition that comes out in October looks like, it's either good or bad, because that depends on how much you like the current version of Gwent, but I could see the argument that it was a necessary thing to do. But either way... They didn't say the game's dead for the next 6 months. They said that the game as it is right now will be what it is for 6 months. And fuck, that's what we do with War Machine all the time, right? Like, Steamroller only changes once a year.
I mean, more people play chess than Gwent or War Machine. And chess hasn't had a significant update in... now I'm trying to remember when the...
How old chess is?
When the en passant rule was standardized. Yeah,
en passant's the biggest one.
Yeah.
What the hell is en passant?
En passant is if you know how...
Other than sounds like something that tastes good.
It's French for in passing. You know how a pawn, as its first move, can go 2 spaces instead of 1?
Yes.
Okay. So if you... So let's
that's where you can take a
pawn can kill a pawn by taking the space that it moved past.
Yes.
Yep. That's en passant.
Okay.
Translates to in passing.
Okay.
And that's all it is. That's the last rule that was added,
the
basically.
En passant capture rule was added in the 15th century. Yeah. When the rule that gave pawns an additional double step move was introduced.
What version number was that?
I don't know.
I mean, I have a copy of Chaturanga at home, which is like chess beta. There's the 4-player Indian version before it came to Europe.
I'd like to know what the notes were on that. The patch notes.
Yeah. And what the chess Reddit forum was like with the new edition. Oh, this 1% rule. Oh my God, chess is dead. Chess is dead.
I'm going to checkers.
Yeah. That's a game that's way better when you play it correctly. The key to checkers is force capture.
Yeah.
If you can jump, you must. You are not allowed to not capture if you have the opportunity to capture.
Yeah.
That is an official rule of checkers, and it makes the game actually really fucking good, like yeah. almost chess level strategic. Checkers is very simple.
Forcing your opponent to put models into or
like you
into.
Force them to do a jump that you then can counter, like triple jump. You know, you bait them in with sacrificial pawns to give yourself better tempo, and they can't not do it once they're forced to, and it gets really interesting.
If you're playing, if you're playing with the official rules or the standard rules for that, it's a much more complex game, and it was only solved in the past like 3 years, I think. Which, given how much processor time people spend on trying to solve classic games, that says something.
And how simple it is on its surface as well. Like that's a super simple game with a lot of people breaking it, and for it to take that long to solve is impressive.
Yeah. So standard checkers, right? It's you play them all on one colored square, right?
Yes.
We should try playing checkers on usually they're red and black squares.
Everybody's on their own color.
Everybody's on their own color.
Very uneventful.
Yeah.
Very uneventful.
King me? It's not king me. What is it called in checkers when you? Oh, stack me.
It's
is it
king me?
Is it king me?
It's king me.
Yes.
When you move the more?
Yeah, it's king me.
Oh, it is king me.
But you wouldn't be able to be kinged because you haven't had anybody lost yet to put on top to wear as a hat.
And that's the only game that makes sense in because you can't promote a pawn to a king in chess anyway.
That's true. That's true as well. That would be kind of obnoxious if you could.
Yeah.
That's what you do. That's a new variant. I'm proposing that you can make a king, and then it becomes his like body double, his decoy. You have to kill both kings then.
Sure.
I don't know how it would not be very strategically useful.
I would be interested in playing chess where you get to build a list, basically.
Oh, so you can choose what?
Yeah, because pieces have values.
Yeah.
And so to be allowed to make a list that has, you know, five fewer pawns but an extra knight and bishop. You know, just whatever. As long as it maths out to the same value, I'd be interested in that. And then you, like, set them up behind a screen or something, so the positioning, like, you're only allowed to use, like, the last three rows. So it'd have to be three if you're allowed to buy more pawns than just the standard 16. But maybe if you limit. But either way, like, so you can't see how your opponent's setting up, and then you reveal them and...
Do total blind chess.
Well,
there is blind chess where you do your moves like on a sheet of paper.
Yeah.
And then like, I think you just need an arbiter that announces when you move onto somebody's space and you see what they killed. And then they find out what you moved there because, you know, like you just like, I'm moving a piece. And they're like, oops, that was his king. And it killed the other guy's pawn. And now, boom, that king's visible. Right. And then when he moves again, he vanishes.
That would be amazing.
I think it does exist, but I think it's like PC. I've seen it on computer because that's easier because you don't need a third party. The computer is the arbiter.
Yeah, there was a variant of chess that Bobby Fischer was pushing for several years.
Was it super racist?
No. Called Chess 960, where you roll dice at the beginning of the game to figure out what the positioning of the pieces on both sides of the board behind the pawns were. Because one of the things Fischer hated about chess was how much it got down to memorization of opening strategy.
Sure.
Where you could tell with how the game was going to go just by pretty much the first couple of turns.
Well, that was one of the games back when I was seriously following chess is that Kasparov gave an online exhibition. And in the middle of playing something he was playing against the internet, and the way they decided the internet was playing him was they had all these other chess masters comment on moves, and then the internet observers would vote for which move to take.
Yeah, I remember that.
And one of the things in the middle of
Kasparov versus the world.
Yeah. Well, in the middle of the game, he just said, "Well, I'm going to do this instead of what I think is a better move because I've been exploring strategy down this path and don't want to give it away." And that's one of the things that really limits my interest in chess is that so much of it is down to memorization of opening theory.
Sure. Fair point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Never played shogi. I want to try shogi sometime.
I've played it a couple of times.
I've played, you know, Jinki Chinese chess, which I love. I have like three Chinese chess sets at home, but I've never played shogi. Seems interesting to me, but
never played it. Never heard of it.
It's Chinese chess, basically, but the main gimmick is that when you capture a piece,
mm-hmm.
and instead of it just going away, you take it over onto your side of the board, you just set it aside, and then on your turn, instead of moving a piece, you can just put that piece onto the board as one of your pieces now.
Oh, so it's like a zombie one. It's a zombie chess.
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, okay.
Well, I mean,
no, I understand. Yeah, they come back.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
It's pretty neat.
It's like The Walking Dead. It's a great show.
No, no, it's not. It should go away now forever.
So they did just go over. They did just go over the last the season finale of The Walking Dead and had the Fear of the Walking Dead. I don't know if you remember me complaining that I was upset that there was going to be some kind of weird timeline issue. So they solved that by basically saying season three ended for the Fear of the Walking Dead. And then this is them 2 years later. So
So the whole gimmick of Fear of the Walking Dead was that it was a prequel to Walking Dead, and now it not it isn't anymore.
No, it's at the same timeline now.
Yeah, well, that's
now,
sure.
Now with what's his name from Morgan from The Walking Dead. They had him go over to the other show.
That is the dumbest possible solution for that. It's
the easiest solution to have your shows be similar, and therefore you can reuse same plot.
Sure.
Plops and other things.
Plops.
And then maybe in the future have other crossovers as well.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you don't want to be interesting or creative, it's a really easy way to solve the problem.
Yeah. Also, not killing off your villain at the end of the season and then taking him in as a quote-unquote prisoner. Probably not the way to go about it, especially when, you know, one of your allies' husband was killed by him. Unceremoniously in front of everybody, and then best friend of a couple other people was killed unceremoniously.
Z Nation is the only zombie show worth watching anyway.
I still say that it, Walking Dead is not as bad. It hasn't reached the Fonz jumping over the shark thing yet. It hasn't reached that point yet. It's getting fucking close, so.
The problem is almost worse than that, because it hasn't jumped the shark, because it's been wandering up and down the dock to get onto the boat to get water skis on its feet for the past decade. Like, it can't jump the shark until it fucking gets on the boat.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's an issue, and it's the issue with the actual graphic novel as well, is because the creator said, yeah, I have no end game. I'm going to just keep shitting out plot lines until you stop giving me money. Yeah, like, he's upfront about that. He hasn't thought forward. He doesn't have a vision. He's just making shit up as long as it keeps printing cash.
But that's almost the same way as any comic book out there, though. I mean, like, Superman doesn't have an end game.
Sure, Spider-Man, but individually, I mean...
the Avengers or anything. It's all just...
But I feel like the MCU does. You know what I mean? Or at least like it was leading up to Infinity War.
Has,
you know what I mean? Like,
it has
arc. Arcs.
Yeah. I mean, I get the impression that they had an idea that there was an end for it, and then they realized how much money they were making.
But I mean, it's not... I would argue it's not like Matrix-style we're going to continue on. Is like we can still tell stories in here. It's just it's be different arcs.
No, there will be plans for an end movie in the MCU once one of the ensemble movies doesn't crack the top 10, the top 10 of all time for box
office. I don't
know
if that's possible. I mean, it's...
What?
They would seriously have to bomb a movie really bad. And even if they bomb a movie really bad, it'll still make a ton of money.
Well, I mean, considering Age of Ultron had box office receipts of $1.6 billion, and Disney thought it was a failure.
I mean, studios always claim it's a failure. That way they don't have to pay anybody. It's just studio math.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, the fact that David Prowse had never gotten paid for being in the Star Wars films, because to this day they claim that they have not turned a profit on the original three films. That's their reason for not paying David Prowse, is that they still haven't turned a profit, David. We swear to God, God's on a scout's honor.
Meanwhile, Lucas sells the whole franchise for $3
billion.
Was it 6 or
But that money had to go to paying for the caterers for Return of the Jedi on that one. Like, it all no profit yet, Andy. This is all just still trying to break even.
Poor David.
Yeah. I mean, just fuck. Yeah. So dumb. But yeah, no, MC, it's going to be a long time before we as a society get tired of superhero movies. Like, every MCU movie is going to open at number one for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
even the ones we did, like, nobody, like, is Ant-Man's anyone's favorite MCU film? Like, it's okay.
It's up there.
And it still made $1 billion.
It's up there for me. I really like Paul Rudd. And I thought Paul Rudd was playing a very good, reluctant superhero.
I mean, I think the Hulk was the only MCU film that wasn't a huge hit.
The Incredible Hulk.
The Incredible Hulk is amazing.
It's the first one, and yeah.
But I'm not saying it wasn't. I'm saying I think it's the only one that wasn't a blockbuster.
And it is the black sheep where it's officially canon.
Hold on. The Incredible Hulk was a blockbuster compared to Hulk. Its previous version of the film, the Hulk. And so that means it was really good.
Hulk was all right. Hulk had its moments, and I respect some of the ideas that Ang Lee had.
What happens?
Fuck you. Iron Man 2 was great. Iron Man 3 was trash.
Iron Man 3 was bad. Yes, yeah. Iron Man 3 is the only MCU movie that I thought was bad.
Raylene and I really did not. I need to watch it again because I shit on it constantly, and everybody tells me I'm wrong, but I'm never wrong, and so I know that I'm right. But I'll watch it again just to prove that I'm right. But I did not like Winter Soldier.
Yeah,
and I'm very vocal about not liking Winter Soldier. But meh.
I like the first 20 minutes of Winter Soldier.
I love the first 20 minutes of Winter Soldier.
Fucking Batroc as a villain would have been amazing if they would have kept him in for the whole thing.
I don't know. I like Winter Soldier. But, I mean, I also think that Captain America is the best realized character in the MCU.
Yeah. Which is why I wish that the film was more about him and less about Samuel Jackson's magic car. I don't care about his magic car or his magic fake death or any of that shit.
Yeah, I know that Bucky is kind of an integral part of Cap now. I mean, that's pretty much. I mean, that was the whole reason why Civil War existed is because of Bucky.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything else, but.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, like as an anchor within that arc, like it was necessary plot wise.
Correct.
Which is actually one of my biggest objections because if they had focused on Cap and Bucky, I would have liked it a lot more. Like I said, I don't care about Nick Fury's magic car or his fake death. And, oh, gee, what a surprise that the business partner turned out to be a bad guy. Oh, what a surprise. Like, and people excuse it because they're like, oh, it's a comic book film. Of course, all these twists were obvious. Yeah, but that's an excuse. That's not a reason. Like, be better than that. Be fucking better than that.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, Thor 2, Arctic Circle says Thor 2 made the best argument for a 40K movie. I mean, you're about, 15 years late because Event Horizon already did that?
No. I just watched it last night, Forward Unto Dawn.
Forward Unto Dawn is really good.
That is a 40K film. That is basically about soldiers they're basically the Imperial Guard, I think, are the soldiers. Well, I mean, we also have
Starship Troopers. Paul Verhoeven's version of Starship Troopers is very 40K-ish.
Yeah.
Well, from the Imperial Guard's point of view.
Yeah, the Imperial Guard. They're not Space Marines. they're Imperial Guard. That's Imperial Marines. Guard versus...
Bugs.
Fucking Tyranids. Event Horizon is really good.
Yeah, Event Horizon was really good, and I did not notice it at the time, but I read an article just a couple of years ago that was pointing out that Event Horizon, you could just say, yes, it's in the 40K universe and everything makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's not any stretch at all, because it's just that they are working on warp technology, and they do some experiments, and weird shit comes from the area outside of space. That's 40K. That's the Immaterium right there. They just don't have a word for it because they're just starting to experiment with it.
I've seen Event Horizon, but it's within like a year of when it came out. So this is 20 plus years.
Yeah. Ship experimenting with warp opens portal to hell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Sam Neill does, man, the deadpan delivery of fucking Morpheus. What's his name? The actor.
Lawrence Fishburne.
When they're watching the video of just like the crew of the Event Horizon orgy / murdering each other, and you just hear all these noises on his face, he just goes, "We're leaving." Just the deadpan way he says it is great.
I have to watch it. I've not seen it in like a very long time. Isn't the movie with Dennis Quaid similar to that too?
The movie with Dennis Quaid has less like supernatural elements and more just like fucked up people. Like, it's not hell, it's just more like mutants. It's Pandorum. Pandorum, if I believe recall correctly.
We've sat through an episode trying to look up the name of it.
Yeah, because there's Pandorum and Event Horizon, and then the third one that's much more obscure is Eden something that's in, like, a giant tree.
Exit to Eden?
Yeah, Exit
with
to Eden.
Dan Aykroyd
with Rosie O'Donnell in the leather bondage gear.
Yeah!
Yeah, just whack it to that. Good stuff.
I've watched that movie.
No, and then the other, more similar to, Disney's version of Event Horizon is
Black Hole.
Yeah. Because that's the same, fucking literally open a portal to hell.
That, and I haven't seen that in a very long time to see the Black Hole. So, I just remember really liking the junky robot. He was probably like my favorite.
Yeah.
Was it Pops? Was it?
I think he was Bub. Wasn't he Bub? And then the... Fucking A, because the smart one had a different acronym. It was like Simon or something.
Yeah, I had all of those toys when I was a kid.
I had a pop-up book, and there was a little lever you pulled where the computer screen fell down on the evil scientist.
Yeah, I had the same pop-up book.
But Roddy McDowell voiced the smart one, and then it was Slim Pickens that was the old beat-up junker one.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
Entertaining.
Of, Dr. Strangelove fame, who famously wasn't told that it was a comedy. And he thought it was going to be his breakout thing. My two favorite performance stories from Dr. Strangelove is that Slim Pickens thought it was a drama, and that's him legitimately trying his best to be the lead in a drama. And that George C. Scott, Kubrick told him, that they were going to do every single scene, they were going to do one take, just goofy over the top to get all the sillies out.
Sure.
And then they would film it. And so he's like, just do one stupid over the top, get it all out of your system, and then we'll film it for real.
Sure.
And unbeknownst to George C. Scott, that first take was the one that he always used.
Yeah.
Vincent and Bob. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I remember Vincent. And then there's the cool looking evil robot too.
Yeah,
with the basically looked like a Cylon, pretty much.
Fuck yeah, Maximilian.
Yeah, yeah. No, I need to sit down and watch some of these old movies. I've not seen the Event Horizon in a very long time, and I have not seen the Black Hole.
I have a lot of my nostalgia as a kid is for the live action Disney films. Like I loved Tron. And I loved Black Hole, and Bed Knobs and Boomsticks and stuff like that. But fucking Tron, I watched that billion, and I would take my Duplo blocks and build the transports that it like had the crusher feet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, me too.
had the light cycle on my TI-83 in junior high.
My parents didn't like Tron as much, so I did not get a chance to really watch it. We didn't have cable as a kid, I didn't have cable as a kid,
sure.
So I didn't get to watch most of those things.
I
got to watch Conan, though.
I had three beat-up VHS tapes, and one of them was Tron. And another one was Watership Down, and that's a fucked-up film.
Yeah, you should not watch it as a child.
Yeah, it's like watching Watership Down and Secret of Nim, wholesome animated movies as a kid.
Don Bluth will fuck with you.
Yeah, Secret of Nim gave me nightmares for about 5 years.
Secret of Nim is Don Bluth, yeah.
Secret of Nim was amazingly animated.
The owl.
I'm thinking of
Bakshi, Ralph Bakshi.
Yes, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, Ralph Bakshi was more like Cool World and Wizards and whatnot.
Yeah.
Well, and the old Lord of the Rings stuff, too.
Yeah. People even forget the Rankin Bass Lord of the Rings, which was laughably terrible. But it gets overshadowed by Bakshis.
I mean, wasn't the whole point of that Lord of the Rings was just because they had to make a film to keep the rights?
Probably.
So they just paid a guy $20 to go here animate Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, the Rankin Bass one is terrible.
But I think that was released though. That wasn't like left over in cinema hell forever. Like the amazing Fantastic Four.
Unironically, best Fantastic Four.
Yeah, it's the best looking Doom you'll ever see. It is not the best looking Human Torch you'll ever see, though.
On the other hand, it's the greatest Human Torch you'll ever see.
That's true, too.
How dare you, sir? Reboot was a cinematic classic, and having the exact same graphics for Johnny Storm.
Reboot is a weird cartoon that actually still works nowadays because it was a stylized polygon version.
Right,
of it.
Right. If you see it as being a style and not just a limitation,
yep.
It's kind of like Transformers Beast Wars. Yeah. It is a limitation, and so it aged kind of poorly. Like, the plot and the writing's still good, but it looks bad.
Poor. Yeah.
But Reboot, like you said, because of where it takes place, you can always go, yeah, that's the style. Yeah. And this is clever stuff. I love Hexadecimal is one of my favorite character designs. That was the villain who she had like a bunch of porcelain masks, and she'd switch out because she couldn't do facial expressions, so just had like an angry mask and a happy mask, and she'd just switch them out, and she had like
Arms. Sounds like it was just completely ripped off.
This is after my time.
Ripped off of one of the Quintessons.
Sure.
The Quintessons, you know, the Quintessons are basically had three faces on them.
Yeah. And then five faces, judging by their name? Mm-hmm. I hope they had five.
I think they had five.
They only had three.
But no, the Quintessons, and then they always had the great thing of, you know, being the judge of whatever it was, and then proclaiming them not guilty, and then killing them.
Yeah, and of course, any show that has Tony J doing voiceover for a villain, you got good stuff there.
Yeah, I know Brian and my friend Jeremy really liked Reboot a lot. It was something they watched all the time. I just never watched it as much.
Character.
I never.
Cool.
Which show was that from?
Early 90s?
Reboot.
Yeah.
I think it was early 90s, late 80s.
It might have been. Because it was during when they had like the TGIF thing on ABC and Perfect Strangers and shit.
Yeah, that was after my time.
Yeah, I don't know when Reboot was. It was also one of those shows where like the second season was way darker for some reason. They'd do shit like that. According to the internet, Reboot was 1994 to 2002. It went on for 8 years. Mm-hmm. I thought there were like three tops.
Oh, there's a well you need to go down.
Also, Reboot : The Guardian Code TV series 2018 to ongoing. What? They're rebooting Reboot.
They're rebooting Reboot.
Do what now?
There's a new Reboot that says it's from 2018 and is still currently in goings.
Did they turn it off and on again?
What?
So Chad has a question. Jim asks, has anyone played Battle Chasers? And if yes, what did you think of it? What is Battle Chasers?
I have played Battle Chasers. It is a...
I just remember the
it's a comic.
No.
There's a
Penny Arcade
game.
Guys were shitting themselves over it, I remember. Or is that a different thing?
They were for a while, yeah. I picked it up for PlayStation. It was one of those things that it pissed me off because it launched with a game save destroying bug.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
That's always good.
It's a... old school JRPG style game. It has some neat mechanics, but in my view, it kind of bogs down because you kind of quickly get to a point that as it gets harder, the best way to do it is have a specific one of your characters heavily tanking stuff, and so you end up not attacking all that much and spending a lot of effort protecting your characters, so the battles take longer than they really should.
Sure.
And it just kind of, I don't know, I didn't finish it. I got, I think, about three quarters of the way through and enjoyed it for most of it, but it just kind of got old.
I wonder if it's, I'm sure it's probably, because it has the same name in the kind of the same business genre, I bet you it's the same thing as...
It's the comic book. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's you have the girl with the giant gauntlets and the demon and the steam jack that's not a steam jack that protects her and the guy with the huge ass sword.
Okay.
I can't remember anybody's name because, I mean, I know it was based on a comic book, but it was still into the genre of JRPGs. A lot of the RPGs, a lot of the character designs just felt kind of generic.
Arctic Circle says that the comic's based off the game, not the other way around.
No, the comic was like 10, 20 years old.
Comic is much older than that. I can almost guarantee that.
I can guarantee that your roommate is making a roux.
It's the comic is old, and also it was kind of disappointing that I think I'm getting old because one of the female characters was nothing but cheesecake, and so it was also that kind of game that it's like, okay, I'm not going to play this until my kids go to bed because I forget what her name, but she was unnecessarily cheesecake.
Yeah, the comic book series was made in 1998.
Yeah.
So I highly doubt that that's even the case. That
yeah.
Unless it was developed based on the game by time travelers.
Sure, sure.
That's possible. You don't know that it's not.
Yeah. The thing is, though, it's only got 9 issues in its entire series as well.
Yeah.
Which I have the first issue of.
Speaking of time travelers.
Time travelers?
So
they're not actually time travelers in this movie, Nathan.
Jason Statham thinks he's being really helpful by sending Blake. Is that his character's name? Jet Li's character?
No, Gabe.
Gabe. Gale. Gabe?
Gabe.
Gabe. Jatham Jason.
Jason. Japesum.
Jatham Statham.
Japesum. Something.
Grape crush. Drinkle. Jason Statham thinks that he's being really nice by sending Jet Li's good guy character to an alternate dimension where he goes back in time 3 years to meet his wife in the exact same way they met his dead wife.
I don't think he goes back in time.
He goes to an alternate dimension that happens to be 3 years delayed.
No. Well,
it must be because he went back to the time. So in The One, the plot of The One is that there are... There can't be infinite. So there's some number of universes, let's say 1,000 of them. That's how many realities exist.
Okay.
And all the versions of you, that you're my Watson for this. I'm going to explain this to you because I'm going to assume you haven't seen The One because you haven't seen anything.
Yep.
So there's, let's say, 1,000 universes, and every David across all the universes where he exists, which might be, let's say, 750 of the 1,000 universes, because in 250 of them, your mom never had you, whatever. They share power equally between them. And apparently natural death must not do this, otherwise coincidence would have caused it to happen to somebody at some point in time. But whether
the likeliness of all versions of you all
is 100%?
Well,
like, I mean, somebody has to be the last one.
Yeah.
Somebody has to be the last one. So I think it doesn't work with natural death. I think it only works with murder. The point is,
It's probably
one of the Jet Li characters figures out that if he goes from dimension to dimension murdering the other Jet Lis, he gets proportionately stronger. But not just him. It's just automatically equaled out amongst all of them. And so the other ones don't know why they suddenly can rip buildings in half, but they can. So it can't just be from natural deaths, because otherwise...
I'm guessing it was probably something to the fact of where it's the actual life force of the person.
Sure.
So, like, you know, if they're 90, you know, they're the last one and they're dying,
there ain't much left.
There ain't that much left.
Whatever. Sure. So, either way, the gimmick is that evil Jet Li is traveling around killing all the other Jet Lis.
He used to be a cop, too. He used to be one of the multiverse
He'd
cops.
He'd be one of the multiverse cops.
And that's why he has a thing with Delroy Lindo, and then he killed off him. How he found out about this is he killed off himself in a mission that they were supposed to protect him.
Sure.
And that's how he found out.
There you go. So he's killing all the other Jet Lis, so it's down to just him and our hero, Gabe. Our hero, Gabe.
Okay.
Which stands for good Jet Li. Gabe. It works if you do it in Japanese. So anyway, it's with kanji. So anyway, the two of them are fighting. And so you get your great action film, Jet Li versus Jet Li. What could be better? Mm-hmm. Especially fresh off of Lethal Weapon 4. Was it 4 that Jet Li was in, where they literally had to slow down his footage because he kicked too quickly?
Yeah.
It's fucking amazing.
Well, and that movie is amazing, too. Yeah, Lethal Weapon 4 is probably my favorite send-off of a series.
I don't know if Jet Li's in any... What about the great TV series that's on now?
The great TV...
It's all right.
It's
okay.
Pretty solid.
It's
for passable. What it is.
There's a Lethal Weapon TV series?
Yes, with starring a weigh-in. So anyway...
You would think it's probably the worst thing in the world? Honestly, not too bad.
It's not the worst weigh-in either.
No.
So
major pain.
It's Jet Li versus Jet Li. So evil Jet Li kills good Jet Li's wife and frames him for that murder. So he's fucked in his dimension now because nobody in our dimension knows about dimension travel, so they don't know there's an evil Jet Li. So
doesn't this mean that he just gets locked in prison and is relatively safe until he can start like punching holes through the walls?
Evil Jet Li gets captured by good Jet Li and gets put into hell. Like, apparently, dimension prison, they just put you on top of, like, an Aztec altar in the middle of hell, and you're just attacked by millions of people for all time.
It's the Hades universe.
Yes. Like, okay. I'm not exaggerating. It looks like a fucking hellscape painting by, like, who's it, Goya?
Amazing.
Is it Goya who did Saturn Devours as Children, the artist? We'll go with Goya. No, yeah. The art nerds out there will
yogurt?
Get it.
Is it Goya,
you know, the picture with a Saturn ripping the head off of his kid?
Oh, yeah.
That's Goya, I think, that did Saturn Devours.
The yogurt?
Anyway, yes. Go-Gurt.
No, not Go-Gurt. I think Goya is a yogurt as well. I think it's a Greek yogurt.
Well, okay then. All right. So evil guy gets put into hell dimension.
Yeah.
And then Jason Statham, I keep saying Jason. So Jason Statham, who is a dimension cop, as a gift to Gabe, teleports him to an alternate dimension. And this dimension, he lands, boom, right at the exact moment where what is the moment he met his wife happens, which is her dog's foot getting run over by a car, and then he runs into, like, help her.
I don't think it was... this one specifically, this dog that was outside there, that wasn't her dog.
Or not, it's a dog, right? Because she's like a vet or something, yep, I think. Yeah, so a dog's foot gets run over by a car, and so he and she, that's their meet cute, okay? And he tells the story about how they met, and Jason Statham sends this dimension where, boom, that's happening.
So what about Jet Li for that dimension?
He doesn't exist.
Here's where the many fucking problems happen, okay? So first, I'm going to backshelf my objection, because I did some research on this to make sure I wasn't alone, and that is an objection people brought up. Where's the Jet Li for this dimension, okay? Either he doesn't exist, in which case this Jet Li's fucking homeless, has no money, has no passport, has no driver's license. What's he doing, right? Or Jet Li did exist, but... must be dead. Must be, because evil Jet Li had killed all but our Jet Li. So
there is. They did say that there was multiple universes that did not have people, because he only killed 123 Jet Lis.
Right, but he killed all the Jet Lis there were. So either there was a Jet Li in this dimension who's been dead, and people are going to be like, holy fuck, Jet Li, you're alive again. Or there never was a Jet Li, so he doesn't have a life to take over. He's just a hobo here. Yeah. He has nothing.
Sure.
So... that's fucked up right away.
Sure.
Okay, so let's ignore that.
We are left in the film. So this is what happens in the film. We are left in the film with him almost getting hit by a car. A dog is hit because of some car swerved. Because he just appeared in the middle of the street. Mm-hmm. Car swerves, misses him, hits a dog. Everyone freaks out.
But we're
grabs
supposed
the dog.
To assume that now he's going to get his old life back.
Yeah.
We're supposed to assume that,
but there's no life back, and there's just a...
because there's no previous paid to pick up.
A lunatic just appeared there,
right?
And, yeah,
because not a lunatic. He was happy at the moment.
But
well,
the world
comes crashing down the next day when he wakes up. Is
wait, that's my point. Is we're supposed to think that he's going to just pick up where he was, boom, and everything's going to go, and he's just going to catch up. And 3 years from now, he'll be where he was. But if this is how he met her, and then they went back to his apartment, he doesn't have a fucking apartment to go back to. He gave her a ride somewhere. He gave her a ride to take the dog to the vet. He has no car to give her a ride with, right? Even ignoring that, and even ignoring the fact that maybe in this dimension she's a lesbian or just hates Asian people. Like, we don't know any of that shit.
She smiled when she saw him.
Okay, sure.
It seems like... it
so seems she's like a very friendly lesbian, or she's a very friendly heterosexual woman who has a husband?
It's...
like, we don't know any of that shit.
We didn't see a ring there either. But it may be something that...
but let's even shelve that. Let's assume she's the exact same person. And let's also assume somehow he has the exact same life up until that moment just waiting for him.
So basically Jason Statham killed that dimension's Jet Li and disposed of him.
Or evil Jet Li killed him 10 minutes ago and nobody's noticed yet. And so... good Jet Li can just slip right in, okay? Yeah. Whatever. Let's shelve those complaints.
Okay.
Let's just assume, like a glove, fit right in there. This is raw time travel.
That actually makes the absolute most sense to me, what you had just mentioned.
Sure.
So it's possible. In fact, that would probably be the reason why he would put him into that situation, because he knew specifically that...
We'll be generous to Jason Statham's planning abilities, and we'll say that this is a dimension that has a life for Jet Li to walk into, and that this version of his wife is the exact same personality, so she has the same likes and dislikes and will react the same to everything that Jet Li does. That's where hell starts. Did you ever see Groundhog Day?
Yeah.
You remember how he has a date that's like 99% perfect with the snowball fight and everything, and it doesn't quite click, and then the next date he tries to force it, and it's awkward and weird, and Andy McDowell thinks he's a fucking sociopath?
Yeah.
That's this guy's life now.
Yeah.
He has 3 years of that. He has 3 years of trying to force the same thing that he remembers. And that's if he can fucking remember it. So he has to remember everything he did for 3 years to make sure he does it the same way, because he knows that he's supposed to end up with this woman. He knows that they should be married. But if he fucks something up, If he wears a blue tie instead of a red tie and it turns out that that's what mattered, he loses it. And that's going to go insane. And trying to remember what tie to wear is also going to drive him insane. And even beyond that, what if they bonded at her sister's funeral? Does he have to make sure her sister dies? If she's supposed to die on April 13th and April 14th rolls around and she ain't dead yet, does he have to take matters into his own fucking hands? If he took care of his wife when she fell and broke her leg, does he have to push her down those stairs? He needs to make sure everything happens exactly the same way. Otherwise, he could lose her, and that will drive him fucking insane. This is hell! Like, this is the worst possible life!
If this was time travel, could he actually be the evil Jet Li?
Maybe.
If it was truly time travel, maybe it is the beginning itself. It's kind of similar to like the Hulk, the Future Imperfect Hulk. I don't know if you've ever read the story, but it's basically the Hulk that survives nuclear war. Yeah. He's basically proclaimed himself as the Maestro. Yep. He's the one who controls the world, and somebody sends him back in time to the very beginning of when the Hulk was created. Because the only thing that can kill the Hulk is being at ground zero. And so, yeah, somebody figures out. Yeah. So, yeah, it could be.
I'm just saying, if I said to you, okay, starting right now, you for the next year need to do exactly, moment to moment, the same thing you did for the previous year. Every single day, every word you say, every meal you eat, every gesture you make needs to be identical, or I kill your family.
I don't think it's that. I don't think it's that.
Nope. It is because she becomes dead to him, right? Like that's the.
I would almost see it as being like. I guess it's very, very short in his mind when she died. Because, I mean, it's technically maybe she died like
3 5 hours
before.
Yeah, his wife's been dead for 5 hours. Like, we're not even going into the fact that now instead, this isn't his wife. His wife is dead. He just has a waking reminder of her that he's now trying to get into the pants of to replace her. Like, that's fucked up on its own.
Yeah. I see it as potentially, he may not view it that way. Because we don't know, because there has not been anything that's come out since that movie, though. He might be viewing it as kind of like, let's say if you dated your wife for a long time and then you broke, you know, things broke up, and then you decide to try it, start all over again.
But she doesn't know this shit.
But
she doesn't know this.
He might be trying it at a different angle this time. So he may not have to do everything perfect.
Even without time travel, I mean, that's sort of like finding your dead wife's identical twin that was raised separately and doesn't know
that she had an identical twin.
And doesn't know you. Yes.
And then you are trying to date her. And then, like, if that first date goes bad, it goes creepy really bad. And if the first date doesn't go well and you're like, no, you have to date me. You don't. understand like that yeah like
I
welcome to Stalkerville because there's no way that he lets her go.
I feel that it's fate. It's kind of like those two embodiments were meant to be with each other, and that's why I think that it appeared in the film that there was an immediate connection between the two, like the star struck, you know, like this is my soulmate, this is that.
So,
but I understand.
Let's say that is the case, and let's say that she somehow fate has stripped her of free will, and she's forced to love this man and to marry him and to be with him for the next 3 years. He knows that this is forced to happen, and that's a weird dynamic for him to have that knowledge and her not to.
I think potentially he would actually tell her what happened.
I'm from an alternate dimension and we've been married for 3 years. I fucked you a whole bunch of times, rimmed you a couple good times, then you died, so now you have to marry me again.
I don't think he's gonna
know. Like that's a conversation. I'm just saying, no. But at least Evil Jet Li's in hell prison, and that's cool.
I think it would probably be even more horrible for him if that world's Jet Li was just killed you know, like basically he dropped him at simultaneously, you know, and then he has to try to fill the shoes of somebody else that he has no idea what to do. Like, it's like, I should talk to my brother. It's like, you don't have a brother.
Right? Also, Evil Jetli's name is Yu-Law, right? Yu-Law?
Yeah. And it's Gabriel Law.
Okay. So they have different names?
All the ones? Yeah. They all do. There's an amazing
sequence. So he has to figure out his name?
Yeah, pretty
much. Like, he doesn't even know his name. Yeah. Like, he's just going to be in there. So he's like, hey, Steve! He's like, oh, yes, for I am Steve.
There's the whole sequence at the beginning when they're going over the deaths of the other laws, and they're amazing because they're like, they're basically Jet Li in like a blonde wig, Jet Li with like a fancy suit on. And
oh yeah, what about if this dimension's Jet Li was like missing a thumb?
Well, you know, he can
explain that. Nice thumb, Steve.
No sword fighting then. No nunchuck fighting with him.
I'm just saying it's fucked up. It's all.
I don't think it's. You are definitely digging way deep into what is maybe a 4-minute sequence.
But there's implications.
There's only 4 minutes.
The implication, Andy.
Oh no, I can't go anywhere. What am I gonna do?
Because of the implication.
Oh man, don't try putting the Dennis system in that.
All right, people wanted me to explain why the ending of the one is fucked up, and there's my explanation. Okay. It's fucked up, dude.
Yeah, yes, it is.
It is when you overanalyze it.
Dude, that is the surface layer of me analyzing things. You don't know the hell that is my brain. I will analyze way further than that.
You see, this kind of my view on that is that anytime a movie involves time travel, it doesn't fucking matter.
It's not time travel.
It's just a delayed dimension.
It's a dimensional travel. It's basically they took. I'm going to even use a point from the film. So they're going to take like this is one zone, this one zone. They just like put it here, and then you're able to cross in between the two.
No, more importantly, this is what happened. Here's one zone, here's another, and they did that. So he didn't go backwards at his own dimension. It's just the other dimension is behind.
He went to a dimension that was actually also forgot to mention this too. You forgot to
they
mention.
Had renewable resources.
They were completely like a completely green planet.
Yeah, it was a utopia as well.
All the cars were all weird, and you know, it's basically what we expected to see in 2018. Yeah. Instead, we have the same old shit.
It's a good movie though.
Yeah,
Jet Li versus Jet Li.
Oh, interesting stupid thing I read about on Forward Unto Dawn, that Master Chief in that film is actually only 15 years old.
Sure. I think I read that too, but like, yeah.
It's because, I mean, they basically, when they unmask at the end of it, they all look like 9-year-olds. They look young, but they're all just fucked up. 7-foot-tall 9-year-olds. Man. I really love that movie. That movie is
good. It's got that same, you know, hoorah, hooray for war on the surface, but in reality, it's a hell that, like I mentioned before, Starship Troopers has.
Yeah.
Less amazing though.
Yeah.
I mean, Starship Troopers is. I mean, if we got Jim could give you some stories about Starship Troopers.
It's a shame that Jim was so obsessed with the title of that movie.
Yeah.
It is a shame. Jim should love Starship Troopers, but he loved the original books.
Yeah.
And the movie is nothing like the original book, and so it pisses him off.
No. Character-wise.
If he could have...
That's about it.
They're nothing alike.
No, but I mean, like, the character names that are similar.
Yeah, that's about
like,
all. The title... Literally, it's just the title Starship Troopers.
Pretty much.
If the movie Starship Troopers were just called Bug Fighters, Jim would love it.
Yeah.
That movie came out when I lived in New York, and I had a friend who was really into cosplay. And
cosplay a bug?
No, he cosplayed a trooper.
Oh.
And he was...
Oh, a trooper. Oh, I thought I wanted the command, because that would be bad, too. If you cosplay as one of those.
But he was also completely obsessed with Starship Troopers. So he managed to build a vacuum molding machine to make armor, and made armor for himself, and was an extra in the movie and wore the armor he made in the movie.
Oh, cool. Oh,
wow.
Yeah, no, that's good. You know, like little subtle stuff, like that every single adult in the film is horrifically mutilated in some way or another. There's not a single non-fucked up adult. They're all blind or have prosthetic limbs or are just missing their legs.
Yeah. Oh, they used a bunch of war vets that had been missing something as stunt doubles or body doubles in a sense.
It's just cool because they never call attention to it. You know what I mean? They just they trust you to see the juxtaposition. They trust you to see the satire of these guys going, "War's the best," and having no legs. Or having no eyes, or having a mechanical arm.
Oh, I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about in the actual gore parts.
Yeah, that too. They lost limbs. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I mean, that's just cheaper.
You don't have to CGI out anything. It was like, Jim, just go stand there.
When I was in junior high and high school, there was a local Civil War reenactor club, and there was a guy with a prosthetic leg who was part of the reenactment. And you better fucking guarantee that every battle they did, his leg got blown the fuck off. It's like, hell yeah, all right, John's going to lose a leg again because it's cool and all the kids get scared. Right?
Why are we laughing at that? Starship Troopers. Really, I love Paul Verhoeven. And Paul Verhoeven films like in that time were just really good. I mean, RoboCop 2, or RoboCop is amazing.
RoboCop 2?
RoboCop 2, he didn't do RoboCop 2.
I know, but RoboCop 2 is good.
That is as well.
I'm going to look at Paul Verhoeven's IMDb and see where he got bad.
Was that like my lookup of Cameron? Is basically when he started with all the others. I was looking up something. I forgot what it was.
You got RoboCop, Total Recall, Basic Instinct. I think Showgirls suffered the same way. Oh, Showgirls and Starship Troopers were pretty much back-to-back with each other. I think both of those films suffered from people not knowing that they were satire. You know what I mean? Like, Showgirls isn't as bad as people think it is. It just feels bad if you watch it.
I think it failed horribly as a satire because it really tried to play itself really serious through most of
it. It was too subtle, I think. And so people didn't... it seemed like a schlocky, bad actual drama as opposed to being a satire. Mm-hmm. So it was too... drama what Starship Troopers was to sci-fi action, and both of them failed because people didn't realize they were satires, and Showgirls was comparatively subtle between the two of them.
Maybe if they went closer to what's the one with Bruce Willis's former wife.
Oh, Striptease.
Yeah, if it was closer to Striptease, yeah. It had more semblance of that in Showgirls, it might be better.
Chat, I might have to clarify my statement because my statement probably was inaccurate based on Chat's clarification. I don't think every adult in Starship Troopers is fucked up.
No, there's
everyone involved in the military program.
The recruitment video.
All the recruitment, all their teachers, all their trainers. The random parents were fine, but everybody involved in the military program was fucked up. I didn't do much since it.
Nope.
Hollow Man in 2000, and then a Sarah Brightman music video, and then three movies I've never heard of.
Which Brightman? I mean, which video? What year? I'm curious if it was around...
It was in 2006. It was for Sarah Brightman, Diva, the video collection, and the video is called I Lost My Heart to a Starship Trooper.
Oh, no. She was in Repo.
Yep.
The genetic opera.
Yep.
Which fucking good.
You recommended was last it? Episode.
That was what you haven't seen. You haven't seen Repo.
He hasn't seen a lot of stuff.
Yeah. There was something, I know we should just keep a track. We should have somebody make a track of what movies David hasn't seen, set him down and make him watch them. Repo would be definitely good. I'd be up for watching Repo.
We need like a whiteboard there and cross stuff off.
Bring in one from work. We could start making the list.
Check it twice.
Yeah, I think there was a Zappity Grumble.
Yeah, there's one on the TV. Or not on the TV. There's one in the chat, too.
I did answer one before.
I thought there was one before that. Maybe not. I don't know. The point is how fucked up it is.
Was Battle Chasers the one of the Zappity Grumbles?
It was in the chat. I thought there was one earlier, but I could be misremembering.
Yeah, back to Battle Chasers. Yeah, I won't say don't get it, but I won't say get it. You might enjoy it, and I mean, it's okay.
You should get Pyre instead. That's a JRPG meets basketball.
So somebody did ask us a Twitter question.
Okay.
That I'm actually answering this time. Instead of letting it sit there until next week when we see it, And like, oh, we should have asked that on this podcast. We'll ask it on the next podcast, and then we'll forget about it.
Yeah.
So now, well, forget it.
Okay, sounds good.
No. Shane York asks, are Pop Tights pop? I can't.
Jason Statham.
Jason Statham's says, are Pop Tarts a type of ravioli?
No. They're not pasta.
Do ravioli have to be savory?
I think raviolis have to be pasta.
Well, hold on. I'll Google this.
How different is a Pop-Tart from pasta, realistically?
Pasta and bread are different things. I mean, otherwise a pasty is a type of ravioli. You'd have to say a calzone is a type of ravioli. And those are pastry crusts, not pastas.
I'll let you Google it. I would consider a calzone a sandwich.
Sure, I'd be okay with a calzone being a sandwich. Pop-Tart
would also be a sandwich.
Sandwich. So a Pop-Tart is a sandwich, but then the follow up question is a ravioli a sandwich?
No.
Well, then yeah. So if you agree that ravioli is a sandwich, then you would have to agree that lasagna is also like a multi-tiered sandwich.
I have to do no such thing.
Yeah. So I don't agree that ravioli is a sandwich. So
I'm trying to find...
is a Pop-Tart a calzone, says non-Euclidean Nick. Yes, I think a Pop-Tart is a calzone.
That would be... I would go with that.
I'm closer to that. But the point is pasta and bread are different things.
Yeah. I agree with that entirely. Yeah.
When I tried to figure out pasta versus bread, I'm just getting which is healthier. And I don't want healthier. I want the actual definition between the two.
Well,
here we go. Difference between pasta and bread. Pasta is made of flour and water, so it usually doesn't have leavening agents. So that's a big thing.
Sometimes a Pop-Tart's crust does taste like it's just flour made from water, made with water.
So then is matzo soup a... Wait, what is that? What is the non-leavened
matzah?
Yeah,
so matzah. Matzah soup's delicious.
Is that a pasta then?
That's a dumpling.
Okay,
type of drop bread. Nope. Point is, pasta and bread are different. Fuck you. And if I have to go to the old porn explanation, I'll do it. You know, I don't know what it. I can't describe it, but I know what it is when I see it. And I'll stand by that.
But it works for every argument.
It sure does. I won't define a sandwich, but I will point at things all day long and tell you whether or not they are sandwiches. And if you try to figure out the Venn diagram overlap that defines a sandwich, good for you. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, you need a personal assistant to do that. Yeah. Just somebody to walk around with you with a clipboard, mark it down. Oh, he says this is a sandwich.
Yeah. Go ahead. We'll figure out eventually everything that is and isn't a sandwich. Just get a slideshow, and I'll just do yes and no on every single thing you put past me.
Yep. So, interesting thing. Did you know that... did you check out... It's a Facebook tool, unfortunately. Did you check out the Facebook tool that allows you to...
I'm a Facebook tool.
Yeah. That allowed you to see if your information was captured by...
Nah, I didn't bother. They can have it. Whatever.
I checked. Mine wasn't.
Mine wasn't either.
I know Facebook says that I'm moderately left-leaning. Because I searched in my settings to... Yeah, you can go into your account settings to see where they have you politically.
I was just curious because mine wasn't captured. And honestly... it seems like basically the most of the people that did are the stupid people that keep on doing all those like rate your IQ and
every one of those just,
because you're signing away your information every single time you do any of those stupid quizzes.
See that was why I was surprised.
A euro is a sandwich, chat.
Yes, a euro is a sandwich.
Go on.
I was surprised that mine wasn't there because it's apparently not just if you did it, but if somebody on your list did one of the malicious quizzes.
Oh,
and
sure.
I get a lot of those completely random dumbass quizzes showing up on my Facebook feed, so I was assuming somebody did, but no, it didn't.
Yeah.
If a gyro is a sandwich, a taco has to be a sandwich as well because I mean, a gyro is a Mediterranean taco.
Doesn't have to be because you could debate whether
it's a wrap.
Wrap is
a kind of a sandwich.
Well, sure. I mean, then it depends on the pita being a bread versus a tortilla being a bread, right? And so, is a wrap a type of sandwich, and is a tortilla versus pita like the container matters?
Sure. I can have a corn
can't
bread.
See. I can't really see calling a pita, something wrapped in a pita, a sandwich without saying the same thing for a soft flour tortilla.
Why doesn't Panera make cornbread bread that you can actually use for sandwiches?
No.
I just sitting there thinking about that. It's like I get cornbread, you know, just like little rolls of cornbread. Why doesn't somebody actually make like a loaf of cornbread? Why doesn't that exist? Why is that not a thing?
Loaves of cornbread do exist.
Where? Because I would
just make them. Yeah. Raylene made one yesterday. I got a whole big loaf of cornbread.
Right.
I had it with baked potato soup. Tonight? You are it. Come over anytime. We're going to watch Westworld. You want to come to my place tonight and watch Westworld?
No, I don't want to drive home afterwards.
And crash there.
But, I have to work tomorrow.
I mean, I grew up in Kentucky, and one of the local dishes in Kentucky is called a hot brown, which is referred to as a sandwich.
Doesn't sound good at all. Sorry. I got it. My mind went horribly.
You have a hot brown. It's probably some open-faced brown gravy thing.
You make it in a casserole dish. It's an open-faced turkey, bacon, and cheese sandwich doused in gravy and then covered with another layer of cheese baked.
It just sounds like a horseshoe, basically.
But without french fries.
Yeah. And a horseshoe is just a weird poutine.
Good. Yep.
Yeah. I'm not suggesting it. I'm just saying that this dish that is prepared in a casserole dish and baked, and the casserole dish is full of stuff, is described as a sandwich. Admittedly, an open face sandwich, but
Corn dog is not a sandwich.
Is a hot dog a sandwich though? I mean, like a hot dog with a hot dog bun.
In fact,
is a Monte Cristo a sandwich?
Yes, Monte Cristo is a sandwich. And you know what? So I think I might rewind on the calzone. Did I say calzone was a sandwich?
I did.
I don't think
you took you took a stance on that one.
Because I feel
like...
we
agreed
like
that a Pop-Tart was a sandwich.
Yeah.
At least Dave and I agree that a Pop-Tart is a sandwich.
I feel like something where the bread is a formed mold sealed around the thing.
So a pot pie is not a sandwich?
Yeah, I don't think a pot pie is a sandwich. I don't think a calzone is a sandwich.
So then
I don't
Monte Cristo isn't a sandwich.
A Monte Cristo isn't fully sealed. You make a sandwich and then you just pan fry it.
You make a sandwich and you dip it in batter and fry it.
Sure, but so the bread, sealed. I mean, that's just an extra coating. The bread is still independent pieces before
that. Be like
that.
Having French toast sandwich.
Yeah, because that is a sandwich that has been battered and fried.
Sandwich that has then been sealed.
Correct. Okay. It was a sandwich, and then you battered and fried it. Whereas something like a corn dog or Uncrustables. Yeah. No, that's so I'm going no on the corn dog. I'm going no on the calzone. I'm going no on the ravioli. I'm going no on the Pop-Tarts, but I'm going yes on the Monte Cristo. And Monte Cristos are fucking delicious. Mm-hmm.
But you could. I agree. Pop tarts are a sandwich.
No, they're a pastry. They're a pastry. They're like a little pie. They're like an individual pie.
So what is the difference? So what is a? How does a pastry? What is the definition of pastry, and how does that make it not a sandwich?
Because pastry almost certainly is going to fall under the umbrella I just did, where the sealed pastry product, the sealed bread product, is built into it as opposed to being an added container around it.
But I could also see a Monte Cristo being called a pastry because it's typically served with sweet stuff like powdered sugar and raspberry jam, and it's deep fried.
I've never seen
what are
like
the contents
stuff?
Of a Monte Cristo?
That's traditional.
Is it just peanut butter?
What?
What's the contents of a Monte Cristo sandwich? Are you talking about like it's just like lettuce and?
No, it's basically you take a ham sandwich, yes. you dip it in
French toast and pan fry it.
You fry it and then you serve it typically with raspberry jam or raspberry preserves and powdered sugar.
But those are side dishes. It itself is savory.
But you normally sprinkle powdered sugar on it, so it's not.
Ham fucking sandwich. Like it's still a ham sandwich. That's different. You make a ham sandwich that is undeniably a sandwich, and then pan fry it. It's different than sealing up raw dough around a filling, baking it. That's way different. Also, can't define it. Know it when I see it. Porn definition. Pop tarts are not a sandwich.
I think we just need a whiteboard for the podcast in general for our taxonomy.
Give me a dictionary and I will go word by word and cross off everything that isn't a sandwich. and then you'll have a comprehensive list of all sandwiches.
Just get a black magic.
So why isn't a corn? Yeah. So why isn't a corn dog a sandwich? I mean, I don't disagree with you, but what's the justification?
Would
for
you
it?
Say though?
Because it's a dog, batter, not a bread. It's you don't take a complete. If you took a hot dog and just wrapped it in cornbread, mm-hmm. I'd call that a sandwich.
Okay.
But taking a hot dog, dipping it in raw cornbread batter, and then deep frying that is now not a sandwich.
I agree with that definition. I was all for corn dogs being a sandwich, but I agree with that. That makes sense to me.
Okay.
But a hot dog, like just a normal standard hot dog or a brat with that in a bun, sandwich. That's a sandwich. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I agree.
Yep, okay. I'm on that.
But a hot dog that's in a bun that's dipped in corn batter and then deep fat fried.
It's delicious.
Sounds delicious. Is not a sandwich.
No, because that would be like the Monte Crisco. Okay. Well, hot dog, is it in a bun?
Yeah, that's
so you're taking a bunned hot dog and corn dogging it.
Yes.
That would be a sandwich that has then been... It's Monte Crisco style, where you started with a sandwich and anything you do to it from there...
Sure.
So once it is a sandwich, it does not cease to be a sandwich?
You have now just battered and fried a sandwich. There's still a sandwich in there somewhere.
I mean, that's also pastry. I don't know. I mean, a croissant is a pastry, even if it's a savory croissant.
Sure.
A croissant could be part of a sandwich.
Yeah.
A croissant is a croissant's bread.
But it's also a pastry.
So is a French style ham and cheese croissant a sandwich?
Sure.
If the ham and cheese is baked into the croissant?
Like as it was raw, like the dough has ham and cheese inside of it, and then you just...
Yeah, that's one of the...
So you take raw dough, so put ham and cheese into it, form it into a croissant.
Fold it over and then bake it. Is that a sandwich?
Is it like a slice that it wrapped around, like pigs in a blanket, or is it little bits, like tiny, like you diced it up and put it in the batter? Pigs in the
blanket. The only style of savory croissant I've had like that was that you just had the croissant dough.
Sure.
Such a croissant dough. Weird podcast.
That's why people actually care. But so you have the croissant dough spread out, and you put ham and cheese on top of it, and then you form the croissant around that, and then bake it.
And I'm trying to visualize it here.
Well, you know, you've had a chocolate croissant.
What?
Have you had a chocolate croissant?
Why is this not gripping?
It's because I probably swapped them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is that like a Choco Taco?
You've never had a chocolate croissant?
No.
No?
Is it like a Choco Taco?
No, a chocolate croissant. Well, I mean, they do more things with croissants than just the little
half moons.
Half moons, yeah.
Because
that's all that matters. The half moons. I want to take like 3 bites of it and then feel like I didn't eat anything because it's basically just all air.
I mean, you take that dough also, and you wrap stuff in it and bake it, and that's also a croissant.
Yeah. I don't know.
But not a sandwich.
But well, that's the question: is it a sandwich?
No, like, you were talking basically like pigs in the blanket. Like you have a hot dog that's
pigs in a blanket. I think would definitely be a sandwich because you take by Nathan's definition at least because you make the pancakes, you make the sausage, and then you put the sausage in the pancakes and wrap them with it. So that should be a sandwich.
But you're just taking dough and then
cooking outside of
do you make pigs in a blanket?
Pigs in a blanket, you wrap the dough around them and then you bake that.
Oh, I'm used to I'm used to you take pancakes and then you wrap sausage in pancakes.
And after they're both already done. No, yeah. Pigs in the blanket Midwest style is take your little cocktail wieners and you take little strips of croissant batter or whatever, you wrap them around there and then you bake them as a thing. I'm going, that's a tougher one. Yeah. That is a tougher one, but I guess, no, I'm not obligated to do shit. I don't have to say, well, because of the corn dog analogy, I'm obligated to. I can call them a sandwich if I want to, but I'm not going to. They are not a sandwich. I think Uncrustables actually are a sandwich because they were finished bread and then they just sealed it, but it was a sandwich that then you just kind of sealed the edges.
Oh, the Uncrustables.
Yeah, those are just a PBJ that you slice the crust off and then crimp shut.
It was a sandwich.
No.
I mean, a savory croissant, a savory filled croissant is probably a closer analog to a Hot Pocket. Anyway.
Yeah.
But I mean, the Uncrustables, that could just be made by your mother. That could be how your mother makes that sandwich. Is that she goes and just cuts off the crust and then throws it in the waffle iron, not on, and just smashes it.
Actually, pro tip, and the machine shed, which I think we've eaten at before. I know, yeah, whatever. Machine shed on the way to and from Milwaukee has a stand at the Wisconsin State Fair every year, and they oft times are up there for the Sporkies. I think they're the ones that have the deep fried old fashioned. But they one year had, and this is something you can do at home. Take yourself an Uncrustable, the sealed ones you can just buy, you know, Uncrustables, and deep fry that motherfucker. Oh yeah. Oh, goddamn, yeah.
You see, this is how Southern cuisine works, is that everything is better after you deep fry.
Deep fried Uncrustables are baller. Do it.
As long as we don't go into cornball territory, then we're fine.
Son of a bitch. Also, side note, fuck Netflix.
Why?
Why?
Previously, I recommended the Joel McHale Show starring Joel McHale.
I canceled it already?
No. No. This is a... Netflix has the thing at the end of your show where when the end credits start, they're like give you like a 3-second countdown and then they skip the end credits and they go to the next episode, okay? So first of all, fuck you. By this time, my remote for my PlayStation has gone into sleep mode, so it takes more than 3 seconds to wake it up, so I can't stop you from skipping your credits in time.
Sure, yeah.
But whatever. That's on... the head of the that's a feature and that's fine. I understand that that's for when I'm marathoning How I Met Your Mother. You just don't want me to watch the credits every year. That's fine. The Joel McHale Show starring Joel McHale is a Netflix fucking show. Knowing that they have this feature, the end credit song is different every episode and has jokes in it referring to the episode, and there are after credits extra scenes of every episode. Why would you put that shit on your show knowing that you've specifically programmed your show to not let me watch this shit?
I think you can actually...
Is that some fucking taking the piss troll?
I think you can actually change the settings for it not to do that.
Not a sandwich.
I think there's settings that you could do so it would not do that. I've had issues with that too for other... for other random shows.
Right. But if there's other shows, like then there's just like a disconnect, right? And Netflix has their program and they put stuff at the end, and it's not Netflix's fault that the MCU has scenes at the end of their credits, right? Like that's sure. But for them to make a show that has shit during and after the credits and not program it to not get fucking skipped, fucking pissing me off so raw. Also, that's not a failure of my controller, Arctic Circle. That is efficient. It is energy saving. There's people outside talking.
Yep, there is. So we should...
Yeah, I'm going not a sandwich on those.
I'm going to say, I don't know. That, what is I'm going to have to... this is a
It's basically like pig in the blanket, except higher ratio of croissant to the meat. And you fill it before baking. I'm going to say
that's
baking.
A sandwich.
It's filled before baking, so I'm going no.
I don't think so.
I'm going to say it's a sandwich.
It's the same way as pigs in a blanket.
I'm going to say it's a sandwich because it is you have a filling that is wrapped in bread or another carbohydrate, and one of the primary benefits of that is that it makes it easier and more convenient to eat with your hands.
So you think chicken pot pie is a sandwich?
I don't think chicken pot pie is a sandwich because who the fuck eats a chicken pot pie with their hands?
Okay, how about a pasty?
A calzone.
Pasty, I'm okay with a pasty as a sandwich.
What? Why would... There's so much glitter everywhere. It's fucking... Ugh. Why would you eat one?
Well, to get it out of the way.
I guess.
Calzone.
Calzone. Just get the tassels sticking out of your
mouth. Calzone.
Stuck in my teeth.
Calzone, mostly no, because you usually eat those with a knife and a fork. So, I mean, to me, it's my primary definition of sandwich is not only that it's carbohydrate wrapped, but it's carbohydrate wrapped, and the intention is to eat it with your hands.
If I made a chicken pot pie this big in a muffin tin, is it a sandwich? Because now we're talking scale. So, because then one of those the side of the Chrysler building is not a sandwich because you can't eat that.
It might be a sandwich for somebody.
King Kong's like, ooh.
But that's why you travel to New York. He had one at one time and then comes back again for the second.
But in a miniature chicken pot pie is just a hot pocket, which I think is a sandwich anyway.
I just thought of a terrible joke.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Arctic Circle. Yes, yes. A wrap is a sandwich. I will say and I will define a sandwich as a foodstuff that has a filling that is contained by some form of carbohydrate, and the intention of the recipe of the foodstuff itself is that the carbohydrate wrapping makes it easier for a person to consume with just their hands, especially like if they were walking or something.
So a jelly donut is a sandwich?
Sure.
I can't think of the name of the word, so I'm not going
to
say it.
Okay. So Tina Turner and her friends go to New York, and they go to a sandwich shop. And they eat a sandwich, and then the waiter's like, "Would you like another one?" And she says, "We don't need another hero." Nailed it. We don't need another hero, David. Like yeah. From the best Mad Max film.
No, not the best Mad Max film.
I know, the second best. Fury Road's better.
Fury Road is much better.
So it's the second best Mad Max.
And then the second Mad Max, and then the third Mad Max, and then the first Mad Max.
Also, Mad Max is better than the previous.
Also, and by my definition, by my definition, a corn dog is not a sandwich because you've already got the fucking hot dog on a stick, so adding the carbohydrate around it does nothing for its portability.
You can pull the stick off.
I could have just eaten that slice of ham without the croissant around it.
Yeah.
So that did not add to portability. Oh,
so you add a stick to that. That's not a sandwich. Then.
So if I have ham on a stick, it's not a. So if I take a corn dog, if I do a corn dog without a stick, if I just deep fry a hot dog in corn batter,
that's a sandwich.
But a corn dog isn't a sandwich. How did the corn batter on the one without a stick make it easier to eat? The hot dog was perfectly edible.
You have a good point here.
There is a flaw. Yes, this is why you have to take the porn defense, man. You can't. You just can't. Just stick with the porn.
See, this is the thing. I'm a scientist, so I'll know it when I see it. I have to come up with rules for this and then be relentlessly harassed when my rules are bad.
Yeah.
That's how it works. Is there a size something stops being a sandwich? Any sandwich that is too large for a normal sized human to lift and eat is a publicity stunt.
A bad one at that, generally. There's that like stupid. I keep on seeing on my Facebook wall that stupid place down in Texas that's got like a pizza that's 10 foot across.
Sure.
Like slices that are, 4 foot long. I'm like, no, stop it. This is dumb.
I mean, I am willing to say that my definition has some weird cases like Chicago style pizza is not a sandwich, but New York style pizza is because you can wrap the standard way of eating a New York style slice of pizza is by folding it, which makes it a lot easier to carry and hold.
You can
hands.
Fold a Chicago style pizza.
Yeah,
you can. I'm not going to.
Oh, look! I got lasagna on my plate.
But I'm going to say it has to be wrapped in a carb, and it has to be portable and easy to eat with your hands, and that has to be part of the point of it.
But it has to be a carb. So like a KFC double down is not a sandwich?
Oh, that's a sandwich. That's an amazing sandwich that gets too much flack for
that's
what it is.
Two chicken breasts.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I don't.
You don't think it's a sandwich?
I don't think it's a sandwich. I mean, also because I have consumed a lot of them because I'm frequently on a low carb diet, sure. And as it turns out, there's nothing but fat and protein, which is amazing in that. But
the
they're not. Yeah, but yeah. They're not terribly easy to eat. Is part of it.
No, they're good.
They're good. They're great.
You just have to wash your hands. You have to. Like you can't eat a double down with like a fork and knife. It just doesn't work. You can't spiffy it up. You just have to get down and dirty with the double down.
Does beef Wellington count as a sandwich?
What's beef Wellington?
I have never had the urge to eat beef Wellington with my hands. Every time I have consumed it, I was given a knife and fork and an expectation to use the knife and fork. So no, it is not a sandwich.
Beef Wellington is like a beef roast.
Okay.
But it is wrapped in puff pastry.
Yeah.
Like a paper-thin layer like a sarcastically small amount.
So it's just like it's just meat with a little bread.
It yes. Okay. Well, and there's also like it's meat, and then you usually put. I know that the current hotness in Beef Wellington, just because he does it all the time and it's on his TV shows, is Gordon Ramsay's recipe has a pate made with like wild mushrooms and stuff as like a layer around it before then the pastry. And so the pastry is to like keep the moisture inside. It serves a purpose. But it is literally like paper thin wrapped around a big slab of meat.
I'm not sure if I would like that because it seems to me that it the idea of it holding in the moisture then means that it's just soggy bread.
No, the bread, because it's just such thin puff pastry, it gets crispy in the oven and the moisture all stays in the meat.
Okay, I could do that.
Yeah.
Is it like the people who have like roast beef or something like that that's on like a slice of bread?
Then the bread gets all soggy.
Yeah, and that,
With the pot roast, you mean? Because normally pot roast is all, yeah.
I'm not like some people that I've seen on podcasts get about wet bread, but I definitely cannot do wet bread. I'm not a fan.
I eat the gravy bread at the when we go to Culver's and I get their pot roast. I eat the gravy bread.
No.
Good stuff.
I throw mine at you. All right.
Hey, do you like Ricochet robots? Sure, all good and wholesome people do. Hey, do you like Jason Voorhees murdering teenagers? Again, sure, all good and wholesome people do. There is a free-to-play game for your Android or iOS system called Friday the 13th Puzzle Murder or something. If you search Friday the 13th, you'll find it. It's basically Ricochet robots, except the robot you're moving murders the shit out of the other robots because it's Jason. And you have to bounce off the walls. It has the same rules as Ricochet Robot.
How fast you can kill the counselors?
Yeah, and sometimes there's a limited number of moves, and you have to use the counselors, because Jason will stop when he hits a counselor to kill him, and you use that to change directions, just like Ricochet Robots, except that when he stops, he disembowels them and rips their arms off. And Pamela Voorhees' severed head pops in and gives you like tips at the beginning of every level, and she's the best mom ever. She keeps talking about how he's a good boy and he needs to make sure to dress warm because they're in the Arctic in this level and stuff like that. It is fun. It is free. Of course, they'll make you watch like ads and tell you, hey, if you spend $2 on alternate skins, we'll stop playing ads. I mean, yeah, that's how free games work. Either pay $2 or live with the ads. Either way, it's Ricochet Robots with Jason Voorhees. And most importantly, if you open up the pause menu during the game, there's like options and quit and continue and key, 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 ha, ha, ha. And if you press that one, it just does the Friday the 13th. Ch, 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 ha, ha, ha. So anytime you want to do that, you just pause the game and the button's right there for you.
Okay.
And that's important. That shows they knew their shit. They knew their audience. So that's my recommendation.
I'm going to recommend arguing seriously and passionately about things that don't matter.
Like sandwiches.
Yes.
I'm going to, now that the weather's getting good, this is my plan for like the last 7 months, and I'm going to do it, is some day I'm going to go down to the Capitol Square, like on a Wednesday when I have the day off, and I'm just going to set up a folding table and chair with a sign that says, I will argue about anything. and just let people.
I do think we need a whiteboard for the podcast.
But yeah, so hold on, let me just get in my thing here.
If we knew somebody that works in retail who could get us.
Get what?
If a we whiteboard? Knew somebody that.
I have a whiteboard at home.
I was making fun of it.
Yeah, see, there's Mrs. Voorhees. She's such a nice mom. Oh, and you poke her. How can I help, sweetie? Oh, she can give me hints. She can skip the level. But see, you go into the saves here, and then you just click this option. Every game needs that as an option on the pause screen. Somebody's asking, what is Jason in this game in chat? And the answer is that there are many different skins. They have Uber Jason available. I'm currently playing as Sackcloth Mask Jason with the classic one-eye Sackcloth from Friday the 13th Part 2 and 3. Good stuff.
What is this game called?
There's Uber Jason. There's,
what's this game called?
They have the from in Manhattan when he was all like toxic waste Jason.
This game called?
It is Friday the 13th Killer Puzzle. Oh. Also, on the main menu, there's a little hockey mask. And what happens when you click it? Of course, that's what happens when you click it.
There we go.
So there's your little free-to-play the game. If you like Ricochet Robots and Jason murdering people, two great things that take great together.
I'm intrigued with it. This is the first game app that I have downloaded to my phone. in a very long time.
Chad is asking what the free skin is. There are actually many free skins. There's like 10 of them that unlock just as you progress through the game. And that has basically just standard Jason you start with, and then it has the more and more decayed ones as the series goes along, all the way to like full-on zombie mode with half a mask and the skull hanging out from like part 6 and whatnot. Uber Jason, I think, is the last one that's free. I can scroll through here and see how quickly they tell me that they want money. I know to get Sackcloth, I gave them $2. That was to get Sackcloth Jason and to have them stop giving ads. Yeah, Uber Jason is the last one that you get without giving them money. But you get Uber Jason, you get Apocalypse Jason, who look... Dude, it's fucking... He's got basically an Immortan Joe mask, because it has like the rebreathers on either side of his hockey mask. So that's a free one. Funland Jason, it's Jason with a little "Hi, my name is Jason" name tag, wearing his jumpsuit. There's the one with like seaweed and stuff on him. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of free Jasons.
All right, my quick recommendation is right now there's a series that's happening over on AMC. It's going to be its fifth episode. I think it's fifth episode or sixth episode that's coming out. The show is called The Terror. It's about two ships that tried to find the Northwest Passage by going through the Arctic Circle. Not through Jim, but through the actual Arctic Circle, not our fan. And they get trapped in the ice. And then shit happens.
No, nothing happened. Nothing.
There's a big bear.
It's got a...
James something.
Killian... Is it Killian Murphy? Killian... The guy who played... It has the guy who played Caesar in the first season of Rome, who was also the head wildling in Game of Thrones. He's in it, isn't he?
The guy with the red beard?
No, the head wildling, the king of the wildlings. Not Tormund Giantsbane, the one that they put on the pyre and Jon Snow kills so that he doesn't have to burn. Mance Rayder. Mance Rayder.
Possibly. It's also... Oh, he's he's John. Okay.
Kieran Hines. That's the actor's name. Yes, Kieran Hines. I thought he was in it. Yeah, he's in The Terror. The Terror. I am getting you his face.
I think it's the captain. Yeah, he's the captain. Yeah. If anybody could look British, like old English British, he does.
Well, Kieran Hines is great. I mean, he's phenomenal in Rome. The first season as
never
Caesar.
Seen Rome, but I've
seen Rome.
Yeah, the tables have turned. Now the shoe is on the other upper hand.
No, I just
you
I
should haven't. See Rome. It's really good, and it was one of those few shows that got canceled for good reason. But
it cost $1 billion. Yeah.
I was going to say it was unfortunate, but the reason was that HBO was like, you guys have spent way too much fucking.
Well, it's
money.
Like Deadwood. I mean, Deadwood basically just became such a money sink.
After sure. It's just unfortunate now those prestige shows they're willing to sink the money into, like Game of Thrones, like American Gods, like this billion-dollar Lord of the Rings series that is
Westworld.
Whatever. Yeah. They're willing to lose money on these prestige things now. They weren't when Rome came out. So the first season cost a lot of money, and they're like, guys, what? And then the second season cost a lot of money, and they're like, no more.
Yeah, sad news, though, too, is Ash vs. the Evil Dead got canceled. This is going to be its last season, which will be fine. I mean, as long as they bookend it. I'm sure they'll bookend it with it open, because then they could actually do movies still. And movies are cheaper to do than a series.
Arctic Circle did a good Tick reference, because your show's The Terror, and so he mentions an old man with a breathing problem.
A funny story is, when Jim and I were watching, when we watched The Terror, because that's part of our new series that we're watching... We just got done watching The Tick. So we went from them battling the terror to, riding the terror into the Arctic. It is very well done for the kind of showing the medicine of the time as well. It's very graphic, cringeworthy graphic for some of the sequences. Like somebody gets their leg clawed and... Well, you can't really just sew it up and let it go. Mm-hmm. Gotta let it go.
Yeah, that it's like the amputation scene in Pan's Labyrinth.
Or Master
Commander. Magic Commander is good too, but Pan's Labyrinth, They cut away in Pan's Labyrinth, but at the most gruesome possible moment. Like, if they'd cut away a half a second earlier or 10 seconds later, it would be less disturbing.
Sure.
I don't know if you've seen Pan's Labyrinth.
Seen Pan's
they
just, Labyrinth.
They give him, like, the thing to bite on. They put this on his leg. They saw once, and you just see it go the one stroke where it goes through the meat all the way to the bone, and then they cut away right at that moment. And it's like, oh, I didn't. Why didn't you go away a second sooner? Now I got the higgledy-wigglies. Like, so, any more, it just becomes... mechanical.
You should not watch the terror, like, then.
If they show more, then you get used to it. But cutting right there, ugh.
No, they show going a few times over until that's they hit less, the bone, then they hear the bone.
Yeah, that's actually less bad to me.
So it's I'll go over a small part of there. So there's a scene in there where the doctor is trying to touch a toe. And the toe just falls off.
Sure.
Because they have frostbite.
Yep.
And you just see it just go boop into the dish. And like, see, the patient kind of goes like, what?
Can I have that back, please?
No, and then they basically start cutting off all the other toes because, you know.
Did either of you take me up on my recommendation of the Joel McHale Show starring Joel McHale?
No, I haven't. Uh-huh.
So this most recent episode, they were showing a clip from some British talk show, and this lady was talking about her new nose. You know, and they're like, yeah, and so, like, they designed me a nose based on, you know, I like the doctor's nose, and I said, I like your nose, so they built me one based on hers. And then the interviewer's like, just to be clear, you don't mean that they sculpted your nose. And I was like, no, they made me one. And she just pulls her nose off.
Sure.
And you just see the hole in her face where you can just look in and see her brain stem. It's like,
yeah,
put it back.
That's one of those things really weird is that
there's magnets in there. It was just with magnets.
Well, yeah, I mean, humans,
I've seen those before.
Yeah.
Humans have this idea that their head is mostly solid and it's not.
Yeah.
No. And it is really weird to just realize and have something confirmed to you that it's like, no, your head is mostly air.
Yeah.
No, yeah, no, I've seen that too. Yeah, where people are able to do that. I mean, that's it's better than trying to. Well, I mean, we saw the problems with Michael Jackson trying to get surgery on his nose all the time. That skin that's on the nose there is super thin, and it's just stretched over cartilage. And you try to reshape it so many times, it's gonna fuck up.
One of my favorites was the I think it was a mountain climber. It was somebody who got frostbite and they lost their nose,
mm-hmm.
and so what they did was. There's a blood supply there, right? So they built a fake plastic nose, and they put it upside down on their forehead. They cut the skin grew over it, and then they just cut under it, but left it attached at the bridge, rotated it 180 degrees, and just sewed it onto the face. So they just have this little U-turn, and then it's their nose, and then they just sewed the scar on top.
That's the standard practice now. My father had that happen because he lost...
And he just had an upside-down nose on his forehead for like a month or whatever?
Well, I mean, they cut off some of the skin on his forehead and looped it around and rebuilt half of his nose because he had skin cancer and lost about a third of his nose. And the reconstructive surgery, they cut off part of his forehead.
Hmm. This one, they let the new nose grow on the forehead.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't...
First.
Yeah.
And then they just cut it and rotate it down into place.
Yeah, they didn't have the mold there, but they cut it out of his forehead, rotated it down into his nose.
But they did just the skin, and I don't know why they did the mold upside down first, but
you should watch The Terror. It's really good. It's it's.
Does he pair up with the man-eating cow and multiple Santa?
No. He didn't do that in The Tick either.
Depends on which version of The Tick.
Yeah. This version. I think this one is by far my favorite so far. It really toes the reality versus goofy comicness.
Right.
It handles that balance really well. I mean, like, the other live-action Tick was just really basically, here's a comic in real life.
Right.
Which,
every version of The Tick is good in its own way.
Correct.
It never fails.
David, you had a recommendation?
You've had plenty of time.
Yes, I recommended arguing passionately about things that don't matter.
See? Okay. Mm-hmm. The less something matters, the more it's worth arguing, as chat said again.
When I don't know how to write a word sometimes, I'll start writing in cursive, so then it doesn't look like I misspelt it.
So are you saying that unless... the walls of the lounge in the Umbrella Mansion were made of a carbohydrate, Barry was incorrect about her almost becoming a Jill sandwich.
Where the fuck did you pull that from? Jesus.
He says he almost became a Jill sandwich, but he says it has to be carbohydrates.
I think...
Barry is wrong. I think about that is his
definition. How dare you question Barry?
I will call that an acceptable use of poetic license. That one can figuratively become a sandwich.
One can literally become a sandwich as well. It's just frowned upon.
Yeah.
Yeah, most places.
But yes, Jill almost became a figurative Jill sandwich.
Fair.
How? This is. I know we should be ending this soon here, but I was going to try to discuss it last time, and I got sidetracked by my own shenanigans, as I usually do.
Is that that restaurant with all the shit on the walls?
Yeah. Shenanigans? Yep.
There's a sequel nobody asked for. Anyway.
There's a sequel that's done exactly what it was supposed to do, and that actually has the same Rotten Tomatoes score as the previous one. The audience score for the second one is not as high,
has
but
it
it's
come
still,
out yet?
Yeah, it's out.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
It has not. I don't think it's done well. But anyway, before I get sidetracked again, is how do you feel about animated GIFs?
I love animated GIFs.
Yeah. Arctic Circle asks
specifically fish butt or yeah. Not fish butt, dick butt. Fried cheese curd is sandwich. No, a fried cheese curd is not a sandwich.
It's that's a fried cheese curd.
That falls right under the same umbrella as a stickless corn dog.
You
could put fried cheese curds into a sandwich, and they'd be great.
Also, don't refrigerate your cheese curds. Then they stop squeaking.
I don't like warm cheese.
Room temperature.
I prefer them fried anyway.
Well, yeah. Sure. But cheese is best room temperature.
Like if you just have normal cheese curds, not fried cheese curds, but if normal cheese curds, I don't like them. Like we're on a trip and I start eating the cheese curds at the beginning of the trip. And I'm like, I'll put these to the side later on. I'll never eat them again.
Well, you don't want them warm.
Yeah,
like they need to be like this kind of room temperature, not like July in Houston warm.
Correct. So anyway, as I was talking about anime GIFs, I don't know what it is. It bothers me so much when there's an animated GIF that's a repeating animated GIF that isn't a proper loop.
It's hard to get a full proper loop.
You could just go backwards sometimes.
Just go back and forth.
Just go back and forth, and I would be more fine with that. It's just the hard stutter stop, and then start at the beginning. I want it to loop. I want it to. It bothers me. I like them generally, but man,
So speaking of which, see, I'm having a conversation currently with nothing but animated GIFs with people, and there's a stop and reverse looper. And then there's one that doesn't loop at all.
Yeah.
So you obviously
that looks so much better. That one you could loop.
Arctic Circle is asking again if a fried cheese curd is a sandwich because it has carbs.
I'm gonna fucking ban him.
Made for portable eating. It's a reasonable argument. I mean, I frequently, more often than not, when I'm eating cheese curds, I'm using like a toothpick or something to eat them. So it's and. Well,
okay, Prince.
I must touch my food. Well, I mean, also my favorite form of cheese curds is getting the cheese curds tossed in buffalo sauce first, and then have blue cheese sauce to dip the buffalo tossed cheese curds in, which is amazing.
Could you do this?
I mean, I'd do that with a shoe. Like, there's
could you take buffalo sauce,
mm-hmm.
throw the cheese curds into that,
uh-huh.
and then take them out of there, throw them in some breading,
uh-huh.
and then deep fry them that way.
That would probably be good.
I told you my chef's sandwich when I was in school, didn't I? That he did for breakfast every day. He would take, he would make French toast, and then he would spread cream cheese on a slice and make a French toast cream cheese sandwich. Mm-hmm. Then he would roll that in crushed potato chips, and then he would deep fry it. And that was his breakfast. I assume he's dead by now.
Or very happy.
Or both.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, Arctic Circle says this, and I want to say that it does that's not a sandwich because you typically serve them multiple, but then you have to say sliders aren't sandwiches. So
sliders are sandwiches. They're much bigger than cheese curds. Cheese curds are.
Well, how big is it then? How large does it have to be a sandwich?
That's
so you're getting an issue there.
Yeah.
Cheese curd is not a sandwich.
I mean, I think the core. I mean, I think the core thing for a sandwich is wrapped in cards and portability.
No,
no.
I, it is a critical, and the reason yours is failing at a lot of points, I'm sticking with one of my keys, which is that the breading needs to be separate from the filling all the way to the end. It has to be a container, not a layer.
Okay.
We should call this now. We're gonna, eventually, this is going to be our topic for the next 3 weeks, is we're going to be talking about sandwiches and what constitutes a sandwich. It's like our topic. We had other topics that
last. We're going to have Zappity Sandwich at the end of the podcast, and that's we're going to encourage the chat to suggest things that we can argue about whether or not they're sandwiches.
This takes care of the corn dogs. It takes care of pizza. It takes care of
a burrito. Is a sandwich.
I am willing to allow wraps to be a subsection of sandwiches. Yes. Because it is a. It is a container around a filling for yes.
You have portability. You have a carb based wrapper. You have a carb based wrapper, and it is done that way for portability. So yes, it is a sandwich.
Here's a question though: if a burrito is a sandwich, is a chimichanga a sandwich? Is a tamale a sandwich? Tamale, I'm definitely going no, because again, that's a layer, not a wrap.
I'm going to go.
Chimichanga is just a deep fried burrito.
You typically eat a chimichanga with a fork and a knife. So yeah. I would say no. I mean that I would.
I
say
could eat a burrito with a fork and knife too.
Right, but I mean that's you don't. But you, I am going to say if the typical means for consuming it involves cutlery, it's not a sandwich.
I've seen people eat pizza with a fork and knife.
Yeah,
and I'm saying typical.
A hot dog is a sandwich. We've already discussed that. We all agree on that.
All right, so we're going to call it, because we could just go on for another half hour of
And I got to get sandwiches. Home and watch Shogun World.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, everyone go watch Westworld. Also, that's a recommendation global for the podcast. You should watch it. You should watch last season, because it was awesome. All right. Thank you guys for watching. We shall see you all
Didn't look like anything week. To me.
What? What didn't look?
It was legit. slow on the uptake there, Welton.
Yeah, I know. It's my fault.